The front office report brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by findmassmoney.gov. And Craig Breslow joins us this morning. Craig, maybe a little bit unfortunate timing this morning because we are with an unruly crowd of Red Sox fans here. Let me introduce you to them. Guys, Craig Breslow, the chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox. Hi. Good morning. Good morning, Craig.
Why is Ken tackling people?
Good morning. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
appreciate you taking the time, as always. And you said, I'm going to start with this, because you said last night that you went into the deadline with the mindset that no prospect was off the table and no player was untouchable. So how is it that Joe Ryan is not on this roster today?
Yeah, you know, while I am not going to get into too much detail about specific pursuits, everything that I said last night is true. And, you know, we approached the deadline trying to identify impact additions that could bolster this team, given what we have been able to do on the field thus far at the position that we're in, and the promise of a playoff push and deep, postseason run. And we weren't able to line up, but in order to add impact players, particularly impact starting pitching, we had to take the position that we'd be willing to talk about anybody in our system. And we were, but that doesn't guarantee that you're going to line up with another team in order to get a deal across the line.
So then would you disagree with Ken Rosenthal, who characterized your efforts to get Joe Ryan as feeble at best?
I would strongly disagree with that, yes.
Okay.
Do you understand the chasm between your messaging and the fan base? It just feels like every year there is this promise of a new, driven, competitive, and just a new way in which that you feel that you will be competitive and aggressive at a deadline. And year after year, fans are let down. I don't understand how all these teams that you're competing with for a playoff spot in the division were able to find matches on deals that improved their team, but you were unable to.
I understand the frustration and disappointment from our fan base in walking out of the deadline without making a big splash, especially relative to what some of the other teams have been able to do. But that doesn't change what our intentions were going into this deadline, what we were willing to do and offer. And I don't think it changes the willingness that we have shown to be aggressive and get uncomfortable in making big additions to our team. That didn't happen this deadline, but it certainly happened over the off season. And we've talked a lot about being competitive and making a playoff run, and the standard that our fans have come to expect from us, and doing everything that we can to honor that. It doesn't always work out because we can't always make other teams line up with these types of things. But it did not change what we were willing to do and every path that we were pursuing to try to bolster this team.
Both you and Sam Kennedy on this show and elsewhere said how aggressive you wanted to be when it came to improving this team at the deadline. Do you feel now, this morning, that you were aggressive in what you did to improve this baseball team?
I think we were aggressive in the conversations that we were having and what we were willing to do. Like I've said, though, that doesn't guarantee that we get a deal done. I also recognize that our additions and our team, I am going to be defined by what happens from today through the end of the season. And we brought in Dustin May and Steven Matz, two important arms that we feel like are going to help our rotation and our pen. And we need to continue to play well and win games and get ourselves into the postseason.
So you believe that this team, as currently composed, is a team that should go deep in the playoffs?
You believe that, yes.
Craig, when it comes to where the power lies at trade deadline, is it you? Does the buck stop with you? Do you get to make the final decision, or is it John Henry and he needs to sign off on everything you do? Who gets to make those decisions? Who has final say?
Well, you know, ultimately, John, as the principal owner, kind of can weigh in. And if he wanted to say we are or aren't going to do something, he clearly has that authority. However, you know, John leaves baseball operations decisions to the baseball operations group. And I have yet to strongly advocate for something and have John stand in the way of it.
So that did not happen yesterday. He didn't stand in the way of anything getting done.
So, Craig, if that's the case, then is he frustrated, just like fans are frustrated, that you didn't do anything to bring in impact players that could impact this team to make a real deep postseason run?
I can't speak for how John feels, but I can speak for myself, which is that, you know, when we had very clear priorities for the deadline and we weren't able to achieve those, there is a feeling of frustration and disappointment. But at the same time, I do think that we made our team better. I think we have a really good young team, and I think that's going to play out over the next 2 months.
Is there a danger that the players feel let down, that the players felt like they were in a position with an ad where they could be very, very competitive?
I think, frankly, I think that there is a risk in that I've been in a clubhouse during the trade deadline, and I've seen the impact of what new faces and additions can bring. I don't want to ignore the fact that we are bringing in a starter and a reliever, and I've had a handful of conversations with guys last night and wanted to make sure that they understand what our efforts were, how we tried to make additional additions. We weren't able to do that, but how much we believe in this team, which is a theme that I think has been consistent going back to spring training.
Craig, where's the $20 million you saved on Devers right now? Who gets that money? What is that money doing today?
Yeah, well, we talked about this at the time of the trade. The trade deadline is not free agency, right? And so having some financial flexibility doesn't always guarantee you a better outcome at the deadline, but our intentions are absolutely to aggressively invest in the Red Sox and the guys that we're able to put on the field.
And just on John Henry, I know you said you're not going to speak for him, but he's part of the Economic Reform Committee. We heard a couple times this week about a confrontation with Rob Manfred and Bryce Harper about the potential of a salary cap. How does John Henry and how do you balance his role in trying to reshape the economics of baseball with building a championship team?
My goal, and again, I cannot speak for John, my goal is pretty simple, and that's to do everything I can to build a championship team on the field. That I don't anticipate changing, and if and when there are different constraints, as imposed by Major League Baseball, we'll operate within those to do everything we can to bring another World Series to Boston.
So how close were you when it comes to Joe Ryan?
Without being able to speak about specific pursuits, this isn't someone who is currently on our team. We felt like we were very aggressive in pursuing a number of controllable starting pitchers. Ultimately, controllable starting pitching didn't get traded, but it wasn't because we were unwilling to talk about anyone in our system.
Craig, when you go back to what Curtis asked in the beginning about losing the fan base, Alex Cora spoke about it, but last weekend, Fenway was filled with Dodgers fans. When you look at that, when John Henry looks at that, does that worry you that moving forward, that Red Sox fans are selling off their tickets to the opposing fan base and not showing up?
Well, certainly when Fenway is packed with Red Sox fans, it's an electric environment. We appreciate it. Our players appreciate it. that's the environment that we're trying to create and maintain, and know that that is a consequence of the team that we've got on the field. But the 26 guys that we're gonna, you know, that we're gonna put on the field tonight are gonna do everything they can to provide that level of competition entertainment for our fans, and we're going to do everything we can to compete at a high level. We've got a really good, young, athletic, dynamic team that I think is exciting to watch. And we've got a bunch of young players that are now in the upper levels of the minor leagues that should be impacting this team in the near future. But we want Fenway to be a very, very difficult place to play for opposing teams, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that happens.
No disrespect to the two arms that you got, and you mentioned a couple times that you believe you improved the team there. But when you say we are going to aggressively go after an impact arm and you don't end up getting it, whatever the reason is, do you feel like you let down the fans on this?
I feel frustrated and disappointed that we were not able to walk out of the deadline room with the controllable impact arm that we set out to add. That's, I think, the way to characterize this. But I'm not sure there was anything more we could have done in order to get us closer or ultimately over the line.
I thought one of the big reasons you were brought in after Heim was let go was that Heim was too resistant to make a trade. Heim wasn't willing to make a Chris Sale deal and other things, and you came in, executed the Sale deal, and there was a feeling that you were going to be more aggressive. Is it possible that you overrate the prospects that you have in these negotiations, and that's why the Yankees and Astros and Blue Jays and Rangers were able to improve their team and the Red Sox were not, outside of a couple fringe guys?
We really like our minor league players. Is it possible that we like them more than other teams? Sure, probably because we acquired them, we have relationships with them. But I do think that we have a number of conversations inside the office in our deadline room about what our goal is and what we're trying to accomplish, and that's to win the World Series. And we have to be willing to get uncomfortable with trading some of our young players in order to do that. And I think the most important thing is that we were. It just didn't work out this deadline.
Is it an intentional focus of the team? And it's okay to say it because I think it would help fans and others understand it. Is it, when it comes to prospects, what you're talking about, is it a focus of this team to hang on to them because of the control factor, and it is a financially responsible way to manage personnel going forward?
I don't think that this was a control thing. Like I said, if it were about finances or holding on to our players at all costs, then we would go into a conversation with another team saying, hey, we're not going to talk about this player. This player is untouchable. We wouldn't trade this guy. We go into a deadline thinking, you know, we would like to avoid trading these guys if at all possible, but by the time Thursday rolled around and we were aggressively pursuing adding impact players, we weren't unwilling to talk about anyone in our system. If that was going to get a deal done, we were willing to include these guys. It just, like I said, it didn't work out. And I think, you know, there's strong evidence of that willingness when we talk about what it took to get Garrett Crochet to the Red Sox. You know, there were a number of guys there that I think we could have taken the position we'd have been unwilling to trade. But we didn't because of the need of our major league team.
So why does it work for other teams, though? In the case of Merrill Kelly or you name the player, why does it work for those teams and you can't make it work?
The short answer is another team who's trading a player has to like our players more than they like another team's players. That doesn't always work out. It doesn't. I don't think that's an indictment of talent. I think each team values players a little bit differently. There are trades that come across where I'm sure we all say, huh, that seems like a really heavy return or a really light return. But the reality is, the the value is in the eye of the beholder, and we have to figure out ways to line up with other teams in order to get trades across the line.
All right, Craig Breslow. Well, proof will be in the pudding, and I appreciate you taking the time this morning, and we will catch up with you again next week, I am sure.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Craig Breslow, the chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox.
We couldn't find a lineman.
No alignment.
No.
I like it. He's the only one that gets bigger booze than me.
WEEI Afternoons on Major League Baseball. Trade deadline day. Let's go right to the phone lines because I've been told for the last 2 hours that I have been annoying. I'm like a 16-year-old girl who can't get a date because I'm upset and annoyed with the Red Sox having done very little so far. So let's bring in Lou Maloney and let's see how Lou Maloney feels about the lack of activity from the Red Sox as teams like, I don't know, the Mariners and the Yankees right around them in the standings seem to be very active. Lou, how are we doing today and how are you feeling about the trade deadline?
Well, I like to think I'm a very patient man. But now we're within 2 hours,
and
I always have these moments where I'm just like, these people, you know, everyone's panicking. They're blaming them for stuff they haven't done yet, right? Everyone's pissed the last week that they have that they won't do anything. And I'm like, well, why don't we just wait and see first?
Uh-oh.
Lou's phone is so angry.
Lou is so angry.
He's like his phone.
Oh, there he's back.
Yeah, you hear me?
Yeah, we got you now.
Go ahead. Repeat what you just said, if you don't mind.
No, I'm just I'm losing patience, you know, and it's coming down to the wire. But they need a starter, bare minimum, period. End of story. They don't have anybody to throw Friday.
Tomorrow? They don't have a catcher for tomorrow? Maybe.
There's literally nobody announced as the starter for tomorrow.
I'm going to the game. I'd like to see.
You'd like to have a starter. Well, Lou, I'm curious. Yeah. What deal has been made that the Yankees, whoever has made that you wish the Red Sox would have been in on XYZ player that's been traded?
And that's the thing. There's really nobody that I was just sort of like I never thought they were going to go get a second closer. You know, like I just didn't see that in the cards. It's like I want them to use their assets to get a starter or to add another bat here in this lineup. You know, Bieber was.
Son of a gun. Uh-oh. We lost him again, man. All right.
I don't know how many guys are good for two months when they come back from Tommy John. It's usually the following year. So what are they going to get out of Bieber? Like, I wouldn't have been excited if he was the only guy they got.
Yeah, well, Lou, maybe the Red Sox can hurry up and get in on this Minnesota Twins fire sale before everyone is gone because a minute ago they just traded Carlos Correa back to the Astros. So we'll get a nice look at our old pal Carlos Correa in an Astros uniform. This weekend, Lou. But see, my dream was, I thought it was a reasonable one too. Try to get Bednar and Keller from the Pirates, and if that meant giving up a lot of the farm and maybe a major league player, okay, because you're going to run into situations like whatever it was, whether it was nauseous or back pains or whatever it was that led Chapman to have to come out of the game over the weekend, and then Hicks pitches, and the next night they have the bad flight, and then Hicks has to come in a rain delay, like. Having two closers really should never be an issue, and now it seems like everyone else is snatching up all the goods, and what's left for them?
Yeah, no, it's starting pitching, you know, but the only thing, too, I keep in mind is, like, they obviously have more information medically than we do, and that one thing, Marcelo Meyer, they haven't talked about at all, so either he is out for the year and they don't want to lose leverage because they're trying to find a second baseman. I don't know. And the other one is Justin Slayton. You know, I know he's playing catch. Hopefully he's going to be on the mound throwing bullpens and he could be back. He could be that second closer too, you know. So it's like I don't know where these guys are at. It's about starting pitching. It's, you know, the Joe Ryan, the Mitch Kellers and guys that are down in Miami with two and a half years. I think Cabrera's got 3.5 years of service left. Like, think about what it took to get Garrett Crochet, who had 1.5 years left. That's where it starts for those guys, because those guys honestly have accomplished more than Garrett Crochet did last year in, you know, 140 innings. So that's probably just like the issue that we're dealing with those guys. But for me at this point, I'm all on Merrill Kelly. I heard you guys just talking about him. Like that's the guy I want. He's an older pitcher. You know, he's not going to get a huge deal in the off season. So the compensation, the ask, I don't think will be as big as maybe for other guys. That to me is a perfect fit You go get that man. You put him in this rotation, and then you add one back. That could be a second baseman. That could be a first baseman, and we go.
Lou Maloney joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. And, Lou, I feel like every time I've heard either Craig Breslow or Sam Kennedy or those guys talk, there was this urgency word. Oh, we're going to use the same urgency we had in the offseason. And people like me go, okay, I like that, because in the offseason you went out and got Bregman and Chapman and Crochet. What's the fallout going to be, not only outside of Fenway Park, where I'll bitch and fans will bitch, but we've seen this team fall off when they weren't invested in recent years. If they don't bring in a big name, a starting pitcher that's a top three in the rotation, what's the fallout going to be?
Probably their biggest issue with their fan base, and that is a lack of trust, which I do think is a problem. You know, whether it is, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and, you know, we want to win, we're going to spend. And you can only say it for so long without actually doing something about it. And, you know, we're already at the point where I hear it all the time. I want this team to do well. I just don't trust them. I just don't trust that they'll go out and make this trade or sign this player. And I think that is your biggest issue. And, you know, at this time of year, sure, you could hear, like, you know, we could have done this trade, but, you know, the ask was too much or all this other stuff. And it's like, yeah, I know, but people just want action. Like, people want a player. I got to be honest with you. I don't care about prospects. Like, I really don't. And maybe that's just the player in me. The guys in that clubhouse don't care if we give up a guy who 2-3 years from now is going to be really good. They want players now. I don't care about prospects. You've already got a young team up here. I don't want to hear about another position player prospect. I throw up in my mouth when I hear people talk upset about Blaze Jordan leaving. Like, how many rookies do you want up here? Like, get me veterans who have been here before. That's what everybody wants.
It's fascinating, the psychology, you know, if something doesn't happen. I mean, Lou, I mean, can we just talk about that further? Just the players in the clubhouse? I mean, I covered the Astros for a long time. Look, I've heard you talk about this. If there is inactivity at the trade deadline, and it feels as if there's a, you know, some good momentum for this team, that the players, it's a palatable thing. Is that true? Like, the players just, I mean, will they be dejected if they don't do anything within the next 2 hours?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yes, like 100%. And you can come out and say, well, we didn't do anything because we trust this locker room. Ted, you've been there. You know what that means. Mm-hmm. And the players know what that means. So what happens is, for the short term, players rally. Okay, we got enough. They look in that clubhouse and say, we like our team, and they should like their team. You know, but when something goes south, you know, in August, when a pitcher goes down, you can guarantee the guys are like, I wouldn't have this problem if they went out and got somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, like, right away it turns to it. And it's just, you when you go out and you add veterans or you add pieces that can help you win, you feel it. You want to go to the park earlier. You're like, we're okay. That's all we need. We're ready to go. Let's do this. When you don't, you still have that same feeling, like, let's go to the park and do this, because, you know, you try to convince yourself, but still the reality is that everybody needs help. You need that extra arm in the rotation and in the bullpen and maybe an extra bat. Like, you need it, you know. It's like, oh, well, maybe you don't need it, but it is welcomed, and it makes, and you feel that in your locker room.
Lou, I couldn't agree more, because obviously now you may be managing Crochet starts and giving him some extra rest down the stretch, which is possibly necessary, but also not that encouraging. As far as on the current team right now, has anyone's performance in recent weeks, you think, either made them more trade worthy or possibly given the organization faith that they don't need to make as many moves because they already have most of the answers in depth they think they need?
You mean the answers of rotation? Like we could talk about that, like, you know, in your lineup, you know, and you could say, well, Toro has cooled off, which is why, you know, you can say that Toro and Romy have done a fantastic job covering up for, so you weren't sure how you're going to cover it up, and they have been fantastic, but you have to take a step back and look at it and say, okay, is this sustainable for two more months? Can they keep doing this for two more months? You know, you can look at your outfield, and that's why I say Meyer comes into play. Like, when you take an outfielder off of the trade market, you know, it's really hard to go out and get a starting pitcher with like 2.5 years of service time. I mean, of control left. So, the position play group, you know, your bullpen, you have added Alcala and Hicks. There's been inconsistencies with Hicks especially. Murphy's been really good. You've added Mats. But it's all about rotation. The bottom line is you just sent down your fifth starter. And so, and Hauk had a setback. Crawford's done for the year. Dobbins blew out his knee. You traded Priest in the first week of the season for some reason. So, I mean, you just don't have any depth in this rotation. That's why you need it.
Lou, we're now, what, an hour and 45 minutes away from the trade deadline. If something doesn't happen of significance, what role will Alex Cora play in the aftermath? Because I know a lot of people throw out, oh, in recent years, Alex Cora has sulked and his team has followed suit. What role does he play in dealing whatever the mess is after 6 o'clock?
Well, he plays a big role in that right there, what you're talking about, like message to the team. I mean, I think this year he sounds differently going to the deadline, where he's just sort of blowing off all the questions and he's like, I'm trying to win today. That's their job. Whereas before, maybe he was a little bit more vocal, you know, as far as what we need, and we need this, we need that. But so maybe there's a different approach, but it'll be disappointment. You know, I mean, I don't mind Steven Matz, you know, you just add an arm for depth in the bullpen of the lefty, but there'll be disappointment if you don't get another starter, you know. And that's the thing. Even if you just got a good starter, I think offensively they might sit there and say, we're okay. You know, like, we'll roll with Toro and Romy. Like, okay, you know, and would we like to add another at bat, you know, to this team, like a Brandon Lau at second base or Ryan O'Hearn or even a Luis Arise, you know, at first base, something like that? Sure. But offensively, we're okay, but we need pitching. They need pitching. They need starting pitching.
Lou, how would you assess this team? I mean, you got they've won 16 out of their last 22, and you see young players kind of – you know, the lineup changes, it feels like, are going to be a little bit more permanent, you know, now that Roman Anthony looks like he's going to be in the leadoff. And so things are starting to become clearer and clearer about this team. How would you assess, is this a ball club that you think can make a serious run? Does it have what it takes to kind of have a special season, like maybe similar to 2021?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's similar. You know, first off, Garrett Crochet, and I think Bale kind of stepping up lately. Giolito hopefully can settle back in again. I think your bullpen is very good. Again, you could use some help just to lighten the load a little bit. But offensively, the problem is with this team offensively is that they're young. And when you're young, you become very streaky. Like you know, everybody lives and dies with which outfielder to trade. And it'll be a three-week stretch where you wouldn't trade Willy Abreu for anybody, and there's a three-week stretch where everybody wants to dump Willy Abreu because he's extremely streaky. Say Don Rafaela, you could say the same with. So there's just a lot of streakiness with this offense. But I think, you know, even if you don't grab a starter, which I find hard to believe, you won't grab a warm body, they're going to stay in this thing, you know, just because I think they are a good baseball team. And once you get into the postseason, all of a sudden the starters become relievers and things change a little bit. So, you know, you can add some depth in your bullpen, but they're young and they need to be played both postseason baseball. They need to, just like in 2016, when all those young kids got a taste of what postseason baseball was like, that helped them go and win a World Series in 2018. And I just feel like they need to get in there. They need to experience and see what it's like.
A name that's been mentioned a bunch, Lou, that I would imagine the Red Sox are likely to hold on to at this point, but who knows, is Jarren Duran. And Duran has been white hot the last couple of weeks. Looks like he's found or re-engaged 2024 Jarren Duran mode again. What have you seen from him recently, and do you think a white-hot Jarren Duran can stick around long enough to maybe lead a surge towards that wild card?
Yeah, first off, I do. I know, just offensively, he's just, this month he was fantastic. And I know even like the last week or so, he's really caught fire, and everybody's upset that Sadon's gone to second base, and maybe that's why he's not swinging it. Well, if moving Duran to center field gets him hot, it's a fair trade. I'll take it all day long, because I'm not trading him. I'm pretty consistent with it because of who he is. Here's the thing. You have Jarren Duran, who put together a season last year that you only hope that the other three can one day do. I like seeing it. I like seeing a guy doing it for a six-month season, not for 6 weeks, not for 3 weeks, not for a first half, not for a second half. I want to, in October, look back at a season and go, yep, how many guys do I have that can have that type of year? And I'm not sure you have many. And because of that, and because of what he brings to this team, I would hate to move Jaren Durant.
Lou, before I let you go, going into the All-Star break, I had convinced myself that it was a foregone conclusion the Boston Red Sox were going to get Joe Ryan. He was talking about wanting to be traded. He was hanging out with Bregman and Crochet for photos and all that. Do I have to give up on that dream, or should I hold that dream for another hour and 40 minutes?
Well, if you have to give up on the dream, I don't think it'd be because of the Red Sox.
Oh?
You know, because I know they want him. I just think it's going to be because of the Minnesota Twins. You know what I mean? Like, if the Pittsburgh Steelers have a dream to get Christian Gonzalez, well, that's awesome. But I don't know. Do the Patriots want to trade him?
No.
You know what I mean? So that's the part of the deadline where sometimes it gets a little crazy in that everybody wants this player, but we forget that he plays for another baseball team. And that team is like, why would I move on from him? I'm not ready to do that. The guys we're moving are guys that are on their final years of their deal or an absolutely horrific contract like Carlos Correa. So, you know, but I'm not moving Joe Ryan. But, of course, he'd love to have him. So you'd have to ask the Twins, well, I think, when it comes to that.
All right, I'll hold hope that the Twins break down and send Joe Ryan. I'm not sure I would characterize this as angry Lou. This was more perturbed Lou, it seemed like.
Yeah.
I think that's good. Well, in about an hour and a half, will it be angry Lou?
This is losing patience Lou. and as of now, I'm pulling in the nest and getting ready to do the trade deadline show. And at 6:03, you might see some angry Lou because they got to do something.
All right.
They
know it. That's Lou Maloney. Check out his Twitter feed at 6:03 to get his reaction trade deadline day. Thanks for taking the time, Lou.
Thanks, Lou.
Thanks, buddy.
You got it, boys. All right.
It is Jones and Keefe. We are live from Gillette Stadium on WEEI, presented by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros at Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlandEnergy.com. Tommy Tuesday, if you're watching on twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, which you should be. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. I just blow out your eardrums there, Tommy.
On that initial,
Sorry, I can't, you know. White Stripes, they'll get you going. It's no, what were you singing when you came up here?
I was singing Steelers Wheels. Steelers Wheels stuck in the middle with you. If you guys have seen Reservoir Dogs,
sure.
Stephen Wright was your DJ on that particular program. Mm-hmm.
So, Curran, your takeaways here on day six. What I know you're watching the receivers very, very close. What was your big sweeping takeaway today?
Sweeping takeaway was, again, another fun practice. I think the offense is doing better than I would have imagined. And that was echoed by both Cole Strange when we talked to him and Josh Dobbs, who said a little uneven in terms of the high red zone and the low red zone. That's being inside the 10 or even down around the 5 at the early portion of practice. But Dobbs thought that they showed much better in the latter portions, and they did. A lot of quick opening stuff. You should see the defense get their hands on footballs, and they did. So my overall from today was it's a pretty fair fight right now, and we've watched the last few years, Rich, not fair fights. Guys wandering through the offensive line with their hand up going, someone should have blocked me. So it's been pretty fair. Phil Perry did a good job on some of the one-on-ones. He said Jared Wilson had a Joe Tooney-esque day in one-on-ones.
Ooh.
Nice. Put down Barmore, put down Williams. He said that Campbell was much better in the one-on-ones. Notes of concern that you guys have probably already told your listeners. Gonzalez not out there. I think the hope is that that's day-to-day and not week-to-week. Garrett Bradbury got rolled on, I think, and he spent the rest of the practice out. And it looked like Morgan Moses was in a maintenance day. He left after some of the positional stuff.
Where are we at on Morgan Moses? Because that was a name we have brought up. It seemed like they were, you know, a little bit of a pitch count, which is fine for veteran guys. Some of the reporting yesterday and some of the stuff we saw from up here, he wasn't really his best when he was out there. And then today, whether it's a maintenance day or something else, like how sure can we be that he is the starting right tackle week one?
I think you can be very sure. How good is he relative to the rest of the NFL? We'll see. Is he a liability? Does he need help on occasion? I think he's going to be a good run blocker, but, you know, the matchup that he's seeing a lot is Harold Landry, who's a friggin' water bug. I mean, it's really interesting.
Well, it's funny looking at the is that a safety
who's lined up wide?
That's a DN. And, he looks Landry, like a little, maybe it's the number, maybe it's the two, but he looks like a littler guy.
He's booking, as we used to say back in the 70s around the end. He's booking, but he is. I think it's a tough matchup for Morgan Moses, but I don't think that they are sitting there going, "Oh my God, we have to do something about right tackle," but we'll see how that progresses. Layden Robinson was the guy who came in, I believe. No. It wasn't Layden Robinson. Who came in after him? DeMontre Jacobs.
Jacobs, right?
DeMontre Jacobs was the second man up there.
Yeah, we saw a lot of Jacobs last year.
Yeah, maybe too much. I think we're seeing too much of him this year. Yeah. With I know they're managing Morgan Moses, but I think we're seeing too much of him this year. So today sounded like a better day. We had read some of Phil's tweets in real time. I didn't realize he referred to it as a Tooney-esque day for Jarrod Wilson. A lot of the writers, Phil included, were highlighting a better day for Will Campbell, as you just detailed. Through 6 days, dialing it back, how do you feel like the offensive line has looked compared to a year ago? Your colleague, our colleague, Andy Hart, said, coming into today anyway, he actually thinks it's looked worse.
Wild take.
As an O-line this year than a year. You think it's a wild take?
Absolutely. I'm like, what, how, where, why, in what way? I mean, we would, relative to last year, it might have been one of the worst offensive lines ever assembled. We sat up here and watched that Philadelphia practice, remember?
Yeah.
And it was just chaos. They couldn't even get the ball snapped.
Philly dominated that. Philly turns out good team, but
so,
still.
Yeah, it turns out they can play.
Yeah. We watched the first day of padded practice yesterday and the somewhat question mark fourth overall pick, at least relative to him being the fourth overall pick, looked really good in 11-on-11. So he got ragdolled in this first time, you know, going against a superhero physique guy in Keon White. How did he play in 11-on-11? It's good. Is Jarrod Wilson, you know, capable? I mean, Cole Strange continues to be, in my mind, a guy who is a more than serviceable NFL starter who's been snake bitten, thus thrown in the bin of, yeah, this guy's a bust, can't play. I just don't think he is that. So I don't know why Andy said that. I don't know where he gets off. I don't know what.
How dare he?
I don't know.
First of all.
First of all, how dare you? But it's that kind of wrongheadedness that is the type of thing that you're going to get from 2-6.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And you'll join them on Thursdays.
Yes.
You can break it down on Thursdays.
You can yell at them
then. Are we to look at sort of the emergence of Chasen as like maybe this guy has found something, or is it maybe more speak to what the offensive line is? Because it seems like he's popping up all the time, like in the backfield and making a lot of plays.
First round pick,
yeah.
Formerly,
yep.
And continues to be a first round pick. You're always a first.
You always will be.
I would say that he's more carving a role than the offensive line looking like ass.
Okay.
I just don't think that they look horrendous. I don't. Interesting today, too, to veer a little bit on the content. I don't know how much you guys mentioned it earlier, but to see some of the read options, some of the stuff getting out on the edge.
I like that.
Was a nice wrinkle to see Josh McDaniels starting to feature some of the stuff that he might not have done previously, because we have heard and we have talked about that these guys keep standing in front of the mic and saying, yeah, same offense. Well, that wasn't the same.
No,
right.
Like you said, there was some option, there was some read option, there were some design runs, which is noticeable, I think, compared to some of the other days out of what we've seen. So maybe some new wrinkles in the McDaniels offense. How do you feel? Drake May, to our eyes, had been pretty strong. We weren't here on Saturday, but had been pretty strong throughout most of camp. Not a lot of throwing yesterday. Today, more throwing. It seemed like maybe a half step back for May. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it was fair compared to where he's been. As Phil, who I always rely on, because we rely on each other's eyes, as you guys do, as everybody does with their work colleagues.
Our eyes up here, we found, have not worked great. We're further away than we realize, and our eyes are really letting us down. So this is why we're bringing in somebody whose eyes we actually trust.
Yeah. We saw, for instance, it was a completion to Steph Diggs down in this corner of the end zone. He stepped out. You're not going to get credit
for that. Yeah, see, our bad eyes also thought he stepped out, so I'll take that.
I thought he stepped out before he even got the ball and stepped out again. Yeah.
No, he stepped out before.
Yeah.
Like, Phil. Wave it off. I gave him a couple bobble calls. But as Phil pointed out, and I thought it was really good, he goes, he made some really, really good throws, and then there was some wild misses. Nice throw to Diggs down at the other end zone that was complete, dropped it in. He also dropped one in the bucket. There was a couple of nice catches, too. One by Javon Baker, kind of going treetop in the end zone, plucking it, amassing, if you will.
Yeah, that was from Dobbs, yep.
And Jalen Polk also didn't count, but an absurd one-handed catch.
Yeah.
I mean, there's signs of life. I don't know what to – at least fogging up the mirror, as they say.
What have you heard from some of the other players on offense about Josh McDaniels' offense, just sort of picking it up? Because we've heard there's been guys, veteran guys and rookies, that have come in here and had a really hard time with it. I know Henry and Bourne said it's similar, but those guys were also in it in 2021. A lot of new guys, including Drake May. But what has sort of been the talk amongst the offensive players about picking up, in some of these guys' cases, their third offense basically in 3 years?
I think a lot of them continue to circle back to it's he's such a good teacher.
Yeah.
And I think that he will have at some point, you know, you're going to have to accelerate so that you're catching up with the rest of the league. And I don't think they're going slowly right now, but I think they're moving fast. Look, I think the tight ends are pretty adept. I think the offensive line has a fleet of fairly sharp guys. I think the running backs are sharp. Antonio Gibson's been in the league for a long time. Stevenson's no dummy. Henderson seems sharp. It's you know, Diggs is smart. It really depends on how do Douglas, Booty, Polk, and Baker.
Kyle Williams,
who I also think is pretty friggin' sharp. Jared Wilson's friggin'. He's very smart.
You know what's crazy? And this came out during the draft.
And this matters, folks.
No, it does. He's a big snake guy, Keith. I don't know if you knew that about Jared Wilson.
I did hear that.
Snake guy.
He had like pet snakes, right?
Yes.
He had to like give him up when he went to college or something.
Correct.
I was like, no thanks. No, but one of the takeaways was both the draft class and the free agency class was smart, professional guys. Like they like across the board, like really got really intelligent players.
And so hopefully they can play too. Like that's more important than just being smart. But it seems like pretty much across the board, like if you're asking a group of players to pick up a new offense or even to pick up a new defense, it seems like they got the right, you know, mental capacity to do so.
Yeah, if you're looking at the 2000s Patriots and you're seeing Russ Hochstein and Tom Ashworth and Dan Copen and a bunch of guys who other teams would have looked at and said, yeah, we don't need that guy, and they win Super Bowls, it's part of the reason is they knew where to be and there weren't breakdowns. So, you know, I know that the wide receivers were not in the places they were supposed to be frequently last year. So is the coaching better? It ought to be.
Yeah.
I don't have a first-year coach, so hopefully everybody gets it. I mean, and the thing is, smart and ability to retain doesn't necessarily have to do with SATs and critical thinking.
No, oftentimes
I mean, Gronk
it's the
was
opposite.
A genius.
Yeah, right.
Like you played wide receiver.
Yeah,
you played receiver.
Yeah.
You played in college football.
Yeah.
Did you have an easy time with new offenses?
I mean, yeah, I didn't think it was the crazy
thing. Some guys
in the world.
Just say you'd have to go to him and go, oh my God, how can he not get this? And he was otherwise.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that crazy. Yeah, and trust me, my SATs weren't very good.
That's I know.
But you're keeping a specifically close eye on the receivers. You're doing updates every day. You can check out Curran's latest at NBC Sports Boston. Follow him on Twitter at Tommy Curran. I don't know how to read the Booty versus what feels like Kyle Williams battle, if you will. Like Pop Douglas and Steph Diggs seem pretty secure, not only in their roles on the team, but in their roles maybe as starters. Bourne seems more tenuous. How does Mac Hollins factor in? Chisholm, Baker, Polk seem below that. But in terms of the guys repping the most with the top unit, I mean, it's not like Williams is getting no reps with May, but it feels like he and Booty are kind of battling for those same spots. How do you feel that battle is going? If it's even fair to characterize it as a battle.
I think it's a Booty-Bourne situation right now.
For making the team.
Yeah.
And Booty's got the leg up, it seems.
Booty's got the leg up because he's
Although
younger.
Although Bourne gave us good dance moves in the corner. We saw a full-on dance down there. Yeah.
Good celebration.
Yeah. Oh, Javon Baker after the mossing also fired the ball well into the air.
Nice.
Yeah, that was good.
I would imagine that Booty's got the leg up on Bourne. As for Williams, they're different, as you would know too, I'm sure, and they're just built differently. One guy is more blocky and strong. That's Booty. And Williams is a smaller guy, probably closer to Demario Douglas size, and is more of a – he's not more of a true X. If you morphed them together, it'd be great because Booty's not tall, but he's very strong, and he's not particularly straight-line fast. Williams is straight-line fast. He's just not particularly big. So maybe they're trying to get samplings of both guys' strengths and see it. I'm sure that there should be plenty of balls – for all of them. But I do think it's interesting how Booty is. He's toilet paper on the bottom of your shoe. He just will not go away. He will not go away. He's still there, and he's out there with Diggs.
And he makes plays every day.
He's,
I mean, like we've noticed him every single day, yeah.
So I think I've always thought that he was pretty good.
Yeah, no, and he's, I think, in the room around him, too. He looks like he has a spot on the team. As for, like, Mac Hollins, any updates there on him? Because that's another guy that those players fighting for a wide receiver spot have a better chance if the longer Mac Hollins is out.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't have anything on Mac Hollins. I'm kind of just floating along waiting for them to say, here he is.
Mm-hmm.
But I am wondering where my guy E.F. Chisholm is.
Yeah, we have
quiet, not, big OTAs.
Not noticed him much. I mean, he does filter in with the top team offense in May here and there.
Then he doesn't get the damn ball.
Right. Yeah. I notice him mostly, to be honest, outside of the individual drills, catching punts. That's the most.
Feels
I
like a practice squad guy to me.
Yeah.
With the pads on, he's barely bigger than a traffic cone. I mean, I'm noticing that. So
yeah,
I had him.
That's tough.
I had him catching 171 passes in his first 2 years, and I'm gonna have to reconfigure.
You're gonna have to scale those back.
Okay,
adjust that.
Or They're going to try and smuggle them through to the practice squad, and they think that there's moles all over the
place. Oh, smart. Yeah, smart. Well, even if they're not at practice, maybe they're just watching on Twitch, Jones and Keefe every day. I'd imagine that's probably where they're getting a lot of their intel. You mentioned updates on a couple of different guys, Morgan Moses. You think there's more management. You said you don't have an update on Hollins. You seemed to intimate the Patriots are hoping that Gonzalez is more day-to-day than week-to-week. We saw
that's
him out here.
That's the sense I got. It wasn't like said, we're hoping day-to-day.
Right. But the sense you get, and he was here today. We saw him today kind of stroll through.
And I, he did have a wrap on the leg, like a Lycra wrap, a warm-up trainer type thing. But I didn't see it. I couldn't tell if it was a swagger or a limp, so.
Okay, well, that's what we were trying to decipher, too, actually. That's the exact thing we were trying to figure out.
Pretty well. I thought maybe a little hitch in the giddy up, but maybe he's just cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Maybe he just got some cool swagger. What are you hearing on Carlton Davis? Because I know he was here off to the side. He's not out there absent again. What's up with that?
Colton, and I just started swiveling my head.
No, I thought I heard Carlton.
Sorry. Yeah,
I love when you guys gang up on me. It was Colton.
Clip that, Nick. Yeah.
And our guy was out there for a walkthrough last night. When they do a late afternoon walkthrough, I happen to see him moving along with the rest of the group. And then I did see him as I was entering the stadium today, leaving on a golf cart, but not in any kind of disrepair. So I'm guessing he was on the lower field or the rehab field. And he was being brought in from there. But I don't know what his timeline is either. It was supposed to be management. Mm. It's still July. I would be, if I were the Patriots or a Patriots fan, I would say I'd really like to see those guys on the field against Washington next week. I'd really like to see us be able to put our team on the field against the Commanders to get a sense of what we're going to look like.
And
so,
just for clarity, those guys are Gonzalez and Davis, or who are you talking about?
Gonzalez, Davis. You want to put your full complement on the field. Next Wednesday will be the joint practice with the Manders.
I'm excited for that. To see Jaden Daniels on the field and Drake May. Jaden Daniels had the great rookie year, but that's a fair comparison. I mean, it's the number two pick, number three pick. See what those guys could do head-to-head. Good challenge for both. What has been your take so far of just Mike Vrabel running the show? Jones and I were talking about yesterday anyway. He was really seeming to be with the offense even more than anybody else. What have you thought of just how he's been running this whole thing so far?
It remains the same as it was in the off season. Very organized, very to the point. You ask him a question, he gives a considered answer gives you some illumination. I think he enjoys talking about the mindset of things, which I enjoy, because sometimes you can't get into too much specifics. They haven't done really very much, and still they're not doing very much. I asked him yesterday, what would you look for if you were in the media? And I thought it was an interesting answer because, we do have a tendency to say, oh, my God, that guy got blown up in one-on-ones. And
some are saying it's the worst offensive line they've ever seen.
Some are saying.
No, but you got a good answer out of him. He said, watch everybody's balance. And
he also
and
said
see
he'd never do media, which I'm with Curran. There's no way that's
true. Garbage.
You'll do it at some
You called
point.
Him on that properly, yeah. Curran. But he gave you a good answer. He's like, well, watch when the linemen are there, offensive and defensive linemen. Watch if they keep their feet. And then the first thing we see with Will Campbell yesterday is he gets knocked off his feet.
Yep.
And so, no, I thought that was an interesting answer.
I should say this, though, relative to Vrabel. I think he did a great job assembling a staff because he doesn't have to be all over the place doing cartwheels and saying, look at me, it's Mike Vrabel's day.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it frees him up to be mostly, at least from what we've seen, with that offensive side of the field when they break down into the two separate groups. He's largely over there. Anybody down the roster that's jumped out to you? I know one name that we've noticed a lot of the beat writers have highlighted is DJ James, the young corner. Anybody that's kind of caught your eye in that vein?
I'll be really honest. I'm really focused on the starters to a large extent, to the point where when Ben Woodridge or Dobbs comes in, sometimes I'm looking down and trying to get what the ones had done.
Yeah.
And trying to process. So I wish I could come up with someone. Chason has been... You mentioned him, a guy that was omnipresent during minicamp, and he's out there a lot now. I think the second kicker, Parker Romo. I mean, I'm digging now, but he was good yesterday, and little Andy Borregales bounced back today with
nice.
A number of good kicks. Of course, Phil goes, that might have been the least impressive 6-on-6 I've seen.
Man, like, so you guys are not sold on him.
I'm
huh?
like, Phil, he just can't win you over, huh?
No, I guess not. 6-for-6, pretty good. I don't know how closely you followed the Christian Wilkins situation.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Vrabel was asked about it not long ago, and he was like, yeah, we'll take a look at it. But then since then, we found out that it's much more than just like how he was rehabbing his foot. He may have also been grabbing feet of teammates, maybe giving a little smooch, something along those lines. Knowing what we know, should the Patriots have interest in a guy who was a very productive NFL player? He's still 29 years old, and at this point, I'm guessing won't cost you a ton of money.
No.
Well, it's always worth vetting how a guy would fit into your locker room. Maybe the fellas like that kind of tomfoolery. You know?
They have a bunch of guys who overlap with him a year ago. They have
Robert Splendid. You can ask him.
He brought this up. They have a bunch of ex-Raiders.
So, you know, they could probably – well, no, Josh wasn't there. I would say until you've done something with your $60 million worth of cap space, then you should continue browsing. Williams, Barmore, Tonga, Landry, White, I'm missing somebody, even old Penny Jennings. You got a nice
Barmore
front.
Was Barmore,
no, Barmore.
Yeah.
I did a good job with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if Christian Wilkins is going to be a $15 or $20 million guy, I would say, you know what? You probably don't need that. That's a luxury item.
He might need a 1 year of like rehab deal. He might need to just come back on the field, show that he can, you know, be a good teammate, as it were, and then go from there. Maybe cash in next year.
Yeah,
maybe,
I guess. Maybe be less affectionate.
Perhaps.
Well, you know, it was a playful kiss on the head is what it was.
I guess.
As reported by Adam Schefter. He's Tommy Curran. You can check out all his latest NBC Sports Boston. Follow him on Twitter at Tom E. Curran. Of course, all over WEEI as well. Tuesdays with Jones and Keefe. On Thursday, you can yell at Andy Hart for his takes on the offensive line. And check all that out on the Odyssey app. Tom, good stuff as always. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you, Tom.
WEEI Afternoons here. Coming up on the beat drop, that is, that rejoin, as well as Red Sox manager Alex Cora, who will be joining us shortly from Minnesota, where the Red Sox had one of the weirdest losses you'll see last night. Nice comeback. My guy David Hamilton stealing bases. They're scoring, baby. They're going to win.
Great to have him back, huh?
And then it got windy. What are you wooing? It was great to have him back.
Yeah.
That's a perfect role player on a playoff team. You ever hear of Dave Roberts? They made flipping bobbleheads for that guy when he stole a base.
That's very true, and that is about all that he brings to the table. So if you're going to give a roster spot for that, that is your prerogative.
But that was a well on its way to being a nice win on the road, Bregbaum and all. And then it got weird with the weather delay. And to talk about it all, joining us now on WEEI Afternoons is Alex Cora, the Red Sox manager, is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when the drains don't flow. Alex Cora, first thing I have to ask you about before we get to the weird game last night is apparently a weird flight to Minnesota via Detroit that had some people sick. I know you supposedly slept through it, but was it as bad as I've heard?
Not supposedly. I slept through it. So, we got off at the airport here in Minnesota, and there were a few guys that they looked like zombies on the way down, you know, like there was a lot of sick people. Supposedly it was very tough, but for me, you know, when I'm out, you know. And it took us a while to get here. You can tell, I mean, Whitlock yesterday, he wasn't feeling great. Bayo was another one, Rafaela. So, you know, we kind of like grind through it yesterday. It got weird, too, at the end of the game yesterday with the rain delay so late. And, you know, too bad we lost the game, but got to be ready for tonight.
So you kind of alluded to the fact that Jordan Hicks was all you had left. So he warms up. He waits 90 minutes. He has to warm up again. Is that a weird situation? Explain to us. Could the umpires have given you a heads up that, hey, we may have to put the tarp out between half innings here? Maybe you don't want to warm him up? Or is it just sort of an unfortunate circumstance that nobody could do anything about?
Well, halfway through the top of the ninth, and it's a tie game, and fans started leaving the stadium. You know, like they're getting up and they're leaving. I'm like, this is weird. I knew there was going to be weather. We talked about it before the game, and nothing. You know, we steal two bases. Roman gets a hit. You know, inning ends. Hicks is hot. He's actually coming in. I'm going to the plate to give the pitching change and the defensive changes. And right there, I see the head ground crew guy talking to Alfonso Marquez, who's the head, the crew chief of this group. And I was like, oh, shoot, you know, and right there, boom, they
they decided to cover the field. At that point, it's like, you know what? They're going to suspend this one. We'll show up tomorrow, finish a half inning, and then play the game on schedule. And that wasn't the case. Imagine, you know, I truly believe it was such a different – it was so different. You know, we just got ahead against one of the best closers in the game. Hicks, you know, he's hot and he's ready to come in, and then he had to wait an hour and a half. He wasn't perfect. We weren't able to finish the game. You know, but, you know, it was a tough one as far as, like, where we were in the bullpen. If it was another circumstance, you know, like, we had more guys, Hicks wasn't going to go out there and try to finish the game. We would have pitched somebody else and try to do it because it's very hard. It's very hard, you know, especially for closers. Adrenaline going on, you're locked in, and then you have to wait for an hour and a half. That's it was a tough one.
So with all of those moving parts over a wild last 24 hours, as you turn your focus to tonight with the bullpen, do you have full availability? Are you expecting Whitlock back? And is Aroldis Chapman starting to bounce back?
Yeah, I just got to the ballpark. We pushed everything back, and I just saw Chapman. He worked out in the morning. He got some treatment earlier today. He's going to go out there and play catch. It feels like he feels a lot better. I told him, I said, hey, if it's not today, it's tomorrow. You don't have to, like, you know, rush yourself because of where we're at. Whitlock is healthy. Obviously, a few guys down that have pitched a lot the last few days. But we're in a good spot. We do need Gio to go deeper into the game, give us 5 or 6, 100 pitches. He's one of those that we probably need 100, 105 regardless of where we're at in the game just to make sure we are able to try to win the game or reset the bullpen. You know, that's how it works. And hopefully we win the game and we are able to reset the bullpen at the same time.
Hey, Alex, Roman Anthony has the best on-base percentage in major leagues in the last 45 plate appearances. And I'm guessing that's why you basically said for the foreseeable future he's going to be your leadoff. But it was also to benefit maybe Jaren Duran, seeing how that him being moved down in the lineup is kind of – woke him up. Is that part of why you said it so definitively a couple days ago?
Both, yeah. Just on-base percentage skills of Roman. You put him ahead of Alex. They have to make decisions. Hopefully he doesn't have to face too many lefties because he'll be sandwiched in between. Well, in this case, I think we got Toro hitting ninth and Alex hitting second, but you know, most of the time it's going to be Sedan hitting ninth, Roman leading off and Alex hitting second. So they have to make a decision. Do we bring a lefty for Anthony? And if they do, Alex is having his best season against lefties in his career. So we'll take advantage of it. And Roman is going to be okay against lefties. With Jaren, I think hitting third will benefit him, kind of like watch the game, slow down the at-bats. He's been really good with men on. And at the same time, and I know it sounds weird, we're going to just give him the green light, you know, hitting third just to put pressure on the opposition. Hopefully Trevor can get more fastballs and then just put pressure on the pitcher. And so far, so good. I think Jaren is having an outstanding month of July, controlling the strike zone, walks are up, hitting the ball hard. So I think those are three, the ways we rearrange it, it feels good right now, and hopefully it continues to produce.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Alex, one of the things we've talked about with your lineup is obviously it can be potent and it can put up runs, but it seems like you have a lot of guys that can be streaky and go through really hot stretches. Mm-hmm. Abreu, different guys. Rafaela now came off a hot streak and is a little cool. How do you explain that? Is it a lot of young hitters learning as they go in the big leagues, or is that just the DNA of some hitters in baseball? You are streaky. How do you explain so many streaky guys in this lineup?
I think there's a lot of streaky guys around the league, right? League average right now is, what, 247, mm-hmm. if that. And with an OPS of 717, you know, good pitching. The one thing we talk about is you're going to go through your hot streak for 2 weeks, but then when it evens out, it's not like rock bottom, right? Like, just stay level. You know, take your walks, keep hitting the ball hard, understanding that you're not gonna get a hit every at bat, but you can put a quality at bat every single time. And it feels like sometimes our guys, our kids, you know, they get caught up on the numbers and trying to make it happen instead of, okay, I don't feel right at the plate. Let me slow it down, take a few pitches. Hopefully I'll be 2-0, 3-1, 3-2 count, take your walk. It's not all about swing the bat. You know, sometimes you gotta make sure you understand where you at with your swing. And if your swing doesn't feel right, then swing less, right? That's like common sense, you know? And I tell the guys, man, like, I wish my managers would have told me, Alex, swing less, you know, because you don't have a great swing, right? Like, work your walk and all that. And this is the truth, man. In 21, Kike, he was on the COVID IL, right? It was Cleveland and Tampa. He came back, and he was having an outstanding season, and his swing rate was low. And he was just maximizing his swing in certain areas and doing damage. And when he came back, he tried to, like, swing his way into the, you know, into the groove of things, right? Like, I got to swing. And he was in this slump. And before a game, it was a day game, I'm talking to him, and, like, how you feel? I'm like, I feel great physically. How's your swing? And he's like, it doesn't feel great. I'm like, you know, you're swinging more than early in the season, right? How you feel? How your swing felt early in the season? It was great. Well, Kike, swing less. And he looked at me with this like, oh shoot, that makes sense, you know. And he started taking his walks. And I'm a big believer, when you start walking, at one point you're gonna get hot, because it means that you're controlling the strike zone. So hopefully, you know, like Willie yesterday, that was a good game. You know, he had some great at bats. He got a few hits. Sedan has been patient lately, taking his pitches, although there's no results, but the process is in the right place. So hopefully, you know, they get hot, and, you know, with Alex and Roman and Jaron, you know, get two guys hot in the lineup will be amazing.
Alex, on Sedan for just a moment, he was one of the hottest hitters on the planet over the few weeks before the All-Star break and then coming out of it. How often are you expecting to see him at second base now with Marcelo Meyer's injury? And how would you describe his progress at the position since taking over?
Yeah, he's an elite defender at second, at short, in center field. You know, probably play him more than we really want to, but is where we at roster wise right now. You saw the play he made the other day against the Dodgers, the double play. He made two great plays against the Phillies in the last game of that road trip. He's really good, and I hate to move him around, but you know, it's out of necessity, right? This is where we at. Tonight he's playing center field. Hammy's playing second, and Masai's not starting. We got David here. He needs to play at some point, right? And he's a good defender. Hopefully he can get going offensively. You saw what he can do running the bases. So hopefully he can have a good game today. We'll get Masai back tomorrow. But, you know, we're going to maximize the roster. That's where we're at right now with the injury. And hopefully the guys get used to it and they can perform.
Alex, I feel like before the All-Star break, you kind of alluded to that after the All-Star break, that you'd hope, you know, that your team was, you know, playing around 500 ball before the trade deadline to maybe entice the organization to make moves at the trade deadline, which is just 2 days away. Do you feel like the club there, you guys are 4-6 since the All-Star break, do you feel like you've done enough and warranted enough for them to do something significant in the next couple of days to improve your ball club?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but, you know, the season ends today, and that's not the case. We got Garrett Crochet in game one in the wild card series, right? So are we perfect? We're not. Are we a good baseball team? We are. And, you know, we just have to come here today and have a great day here in Minnesota. Hopefully tomorrow win the series, and then Thursday wait and see what happens. I know Craig and the group, they're working hard, you know, the phones and talking to people. And the expectations are, you know, for us to be better or to improve the team in the upcoming days, right? That's not a guarantee that we're going to be better. But the hope is that we improve the team and then we keep playing good baseball. And, you know, it's hard right now, I bet, you know, in every office, right? Because you look around, there's a lot of teams that have a chance to make it to the playoffs. So, you know, the prices probably are up the roof. You know, they're way up there, and you have to be smart not only for the now but also for the future. But just talking to Craig and the people involved, you know, the goal is for us to improve in the upcoming days.
Is that a necessity? Because I know you've made some comments that other teams are going to improve. So it's not just about you improving, but if you don't do anything and somebody else improves, you're falling behind. So is it almost a necessity to keep up with the Joneses, quote unquote, to improve the baseball team in 2 days?
I'm a big believer that, you know, around this time, you know what you need to do to get better. Right. And like I said, we're not a perfect team. So, you know, we'll see what the upcoming days have to bring, you know, and, at the same time, it is a different group compared to the last few years. There's not a lot of veteran guys, you know. There's a lot of kids that are playing here that are playing to establish themselves in the big leagues, and I hope they cancel the noise, right, and they just keep playing. So, like I said, you know, our job is for us to show up today. We got G on the mound and put some good at-bats and win the game and do the same thing tomorrow, and then Thursday is going to be an off day, so – you know, some people will enjoy it. Others have to work a lot.
Alex, before I park on Saturday, all the Dodgers fans, and I wanted to ask you, was that sort of a disappointment in fans in allowing that environment to be created in your home ballpark? Or was your alluding to the Dodgers and their success almost disappointment in the organization for you guys not competing at a high enough level to prevent that from happening in your own ballpark?
No. It was a tip of the hat to the Dodgers, to the organization, to their fan base. This topic has been going on the last few years. You know, like, if I'm a Dodger fan and if I live in the East Coast, when they go to Fenway Park, I want to be there, right? And, you know, it was different. It was very different. But at the same time, if you look at the highlights of the 2018 World Series, Game 5, I guarantee you there were three quarters of the fans there, they were Red Sox fans, you know. So it goes hand in hand, right? And I think people enjoy going to Fenway, but that fan base, just like the Mets, man, the last few years, they're doing an amazing job traveling, and they have this it's very similar to football, right, to soccer overseas, you know. Like, they have this group of fans that they travel, you know, and they like to take over the opposition stadiums. And, you know, it was more about – what they have done lately, and obviously the fan base, you know, they've been amazing.
All right, I know I can't ask you to say this, but I'm just going to say two words that I want to hear by Thursday are Joe Ryan. That's what I'm looking for at the trade deadline. We can go about our business. I'll wish you good luck tonight in Minnesota, but I'm still dreaming of Joe Ryan heading toward the trade deadline, so good luck out there.
I appreciate you. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks, bye-bye. Alex. That's Red Sox manager Alex Cora here with WEEI Afternoons. WEEI Afternoons with a little bit of a schedule change here. Alex Cora is a little bit delayed, so he'll probably be closer to about 15 minutes from now, around 3:45, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. So instead,
can we speculate?
What do you got?
Can we speculate that he's weighing in on the newest member of the Boston Red Sox?
Ooh, Joe Ryan.
They're right down the hall. He might have just needed to call a couple people into the manager's office. Here's your locker.
I like where your head's at. I'd like to think that was the case, or maybe just the bus is like 15 minutes late or whatever.
I like the point you guys made yesterday, though. The shop is open for the Twins. So they got the flag open. They're ready to go.
Make an offer. If you see it, you like it, make an offer. Have cash in pocket ready to buy. So we'll talk to Alex Cora about 15 minutes here on WEI Afternoon. But we just mentioned Ted and I were down at Gillette Stadium, Patriots training camp practice. We got another one of our interviews off to the side, and today it was Cole Strange. Looks like he is going to be the starting left guard. He's been in that spot with the first unit throughout the totality of camp. He is healthy. He's a large man. If you're watching on Twitch or you see the clips on social media, tough draw for Andy today in between Ted Johnson and Cole Strange. And be sure to listen. If you heard any tone or biting questions from me, Ted Johnson didn't care for the tone I brought to the interview. Let's see what you have to think. So Cole Strange down at Patriots training camp with WEEI Afternoons. Andy Hart, Ted Johnson, WEEI Afternoons down at training camp with the Patriots once again. Joining us today, offensive lineman Cole Strange. Cole, how's camp going so far? You're healthy? Looks like you're competing out there. How's things going?
For sure, man. Honestly, the first thing you said is the biggest thing, just being healthy. It's definitely a grind. A little bit warmer these past couple days, but I just feel blessed to be healthy and be out here and be able to compete.
You've been through a couple of regimes now here, offensive line coaches, head coaches. First week of Mike Vrabel, how would you describe what you're going through right here?
I don't know. I would say definitely positive. I feel very positive about it. You know, he keeps us accountable, holds guys' feet to the fire. And I think it's clear, too, like they're pushing us early on, like from the jump. There's no, you know, off time. There's no time for slack or for, like, you know, we'll ease into this. From the first day, it's been, you know, we're going to coach the hell out of you and you're going to get after it. And, you know, no mistakes are okay, which I think is a very good thing.
Cole, you have an accomplished position coach in Doug Marone, been head coach and offensive line coach for a long time, and kind of a character from what I know of him. What are your thoughts on Doug Marone so far?
I like him. Don't want to brown nose too much here in the interview, but you know, he's very honest, very direct, and I feel like just those two things in a coach is automatically, you know, a really, really good thing. You know,
what is your mindset? Because it feels like you're kind of, I don't want to say crossroads, I don't know what term you would use, but you've dealt with injuries, you've dealt with coaching changes, you're at that point in your career where maybe it's make or break time. Like, what's your mindset approaching all of that?
Man, really the only mindset to have is just hustle and compete. You know, whatever, however the cards fall, it's sort of like out of my control as long as I just do what I can do and, you know what I mean, bust my ass and compete.
Is that actually easier, being able to compete, because you've dealt with so much time injured, watching from afar, rehabbing? Now you can compete.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely easier to be out here and compete and struggle and be out of breath and be, you know, dealing with a seat than it is to be completely out of the game. And, you know what I mean? It's a whole different, like, mindset. You know, you're just out of it, and that sucks. So I'd rather be here every day.
You're a former first-rounder. You got a first-rounder working right next to you. How's that been working next to Will Campbell? How's he doing?
It's been good. Will hustles. He gets after it, communicates really well. He's smart. Yeah, I'm excited to see him, you know, keep playing, excited to play next to him.
So we talk about the wide receivers a lot and Josh's offense and slot receivers, how hard it is. What about from a lineman's perspective, a new year and a new scheme with Josh McDaniels? What does that mean for you? How challenging? How similar is it? What's that transition like?
I would say some of the scheme stuff is similar to what it was my rookie year. You know, there was some remnants of our system my rookie year that were similar to this offense, so it hadn't been completely new, but even that isn't really too big of a deal. I've had, like, I think 10 different line coaches since my freshman year of college. So, like, a new regime change is sort of just part of it at this point. But, like, he communicates very effectively, very directly. And I feel like that's all you can ask for. You know what I mean?
That is all you can ask for. The quarterback looked pretty good out there today.
Good,
you know,
yeah.
You're expecting big things out of him in the second year. Just what have you seen from Drake from leadership standpoint? Just his, is how he's doing out there on the field.
He's improving for sure. You know, he gets after it and works hard. I got a lot of respect for Drake, for sure.
What's his leadership style? Because as the quarterback, whether he wants to be or not, he's the leader of the offense, leader of the team. What do you see in year two as he develops kind of his leadership style?
I would say you are right. Like, the quarterback kind of has to be the leader. And I feel like he steps into that and owns that pretty well.
On the flip side, we're talking about this defense. It's veteran defense, a lot of talent on that side of the ball. What do you see blocking those guys, going up against that defense every day for a few days out here on the practice field, the potential of that group, I guess?
Yeah, I think the potential is really great. I think, I don't know. I feel like we just got a bunch of dudes over there, you know? And it's good for us, too, because, you know, I'm only going to get better going against them and competing against them. So I feel like I feel very good about them.
This is the question I've been really wanting to ask you, though, Cole, is – any the rookie skits? Any of your good rookie skits? Anything you can share?
We actually haven't had our skit yet. It's you know, we'd usually save it for like mid to late camp.
Okay.
Whenever we're really in the grind.
Okay.
But
do you got some personalities that are from the rookies that do you think will do pretty good in their skits?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm looking forward to it. Honestly, we've had a couple of good songs already. You know, a couple of good jokes.
Okay.
A couple of bad jokes. But that's just part of it. You know,
yeah.
If it's a decent joke, you got to boo them still.
Sell it.
Yeah.
Still sell it.
But no, I think I'm looking forward to it for sure.
All right, so I feel like I need to ask this because I'm going to get made fun of on the internet. I'm the short guy between the current offensive lineman, the former linebacker in the NFL. So as you look at him, you size him up because he made a career. What's it called? Stunt
separating.
Yeah, so, he's sizing you
sizing
up now,
you
what
up.
You would do to him. How could you handle Ted Johnson? If the blogging assignment said you're one-on-one with Ted Johnson, what are you doing?
I don't mean to assume. I haven't seen your film, but I would assume you would try to, like, blow an offense lineman up. which honestly, I prefer that over to the guys who try to like play over the top or, you know what I mean, like finesse you.
Yeah.
So I would just try to take him down the middle and get leverage on him. Like, he's a big dude, tall, which, I mean, impressive size-wise, yeah. But yeah, like, yeah. Just try to get leverage and take him right down the middle.
I like
really.
That. He's confident. I like that, Inkle. But you know what? It is the height. These guys feel like they can get under me, and that's okay. You know, I'll let them think that. I appreciate you, Cole, man.
Thank All right,
you.
Cole, thanks for joining us. That's WEEI Afternoons. Andy Hart, Ted Johnson Thank down you. At Patriots Camp with Cole Strange.
Okay, so the first text reaction we got from the 774, Andy basically called him a bust.
Yeah, yep. Pretty much.
I'm not,
no,
you know,
I didn't.
I'm not saying you're at a crossroads. I'm not saying your career is just a couple minutes from ending. But so how do you feel being out here? Come on, man. That's what it is.
Yeah, but you don't need to say it to his face.
I didn't say it with any tone.
Say it behind his back on the radio like we all do.
It doesn't need tone. That phrase doesn't need tone. You're just saying that phrase right there.
The truth is never mean. I think he's at a career crossroads in New England.
Okay.
He's got a chance to win a job, and if he wins a job and plays well at left guard, he might win a contract and might be here for a while. That might all happen.
Yeah. Walk off the set, too, when we're trying to interview.
You didn't say
Wouldn't
New England.
Wouldn't be the first.
You also didn't say New England. You just said you could say you're at a crossroads at 26 years old.
I'd just like to point out.
Just like to clarify, like my counselor, like my client to know.
It seems Ted Johnson, Dan Ball, the 774, and all y'all took more offense to it than he did. He answered it in a true professional way.
He did, but there was like a second hesitation before he answered it. So he thought for 1 second, is this guy really asking me this question this way?
And Ted just likes him because he said impressive size, impressive size.
He's, you know what? I'm a fan of Cole. I think he can be a good player in this league. He's just got to go do it now.
All right, that's Cole Strange.